I am going through a very, very, very deep, mysterious force in my life that I've never been through before, namely grief. And it's boy, I'll tell you, it's weird, folks. As you know, I'm sure you know, I lost Ramona, and I lost such a big part of me. So I go through these jags. They come and go like ocean waves, building and crashing. And surely I miss this woman of mine. Anyway, I've done a whole bunch of things. You may notice in the webcam photo that I look a little different, normally wearing all black. Not today. In fact, we'll see who can notice what in the webcam. How about leaving it that way? Let's see who can notice any difference. I sound like a woman saying, "What do you notice? What do you see different?" Anyway, on my webcam shot, that's me, and I'll put up the picture of this little Abby Dose, crazy Abby Dose. This little cat of mine likes water, and I'm not kidding when I say he likes water. I mean, he really likes water. When I'm running water in the sink, he will amble on over and throw his head under the water. Now, that's not a cat-like thing to do. He throws his head under the water. And I go, "You little dope." He's just a blast. All right, coming up in a moment, down to biz, the world's foremost remote viewing teacher. Edward A. Deames, Major, U.S. Army retired, is a decorated military intelligence officer, actually an original member of the U.S. Army prototype remote viewing training program, the one the CIA ran, remember? He served as the training and operations officer for the DIA, Defense Intelligence Agency's Psychic Intelligence Collection Unit, and currently serves as executive director for the Matrix Intelligence Agency, a private consulting group, the technical consultant for the feature film Suspect Zero. That I saw it. It was a very good movie, Suspect Zero. We're seeing, believe me, a Tom Cruise, Paula Wagner production. Ed coached Sir Ben Kingsley, who was, by the way, superb in that part, and played the role of an FBI remote viewing instructor in the movie as well. Short, but there was Ed. Tonight, we're going to be talking about a very unusual topic, actually, for Ed. Very unusual. We're going to talk about Bigfoot. And so I'm very much looking forward to that coming up in a moment. Ed Deames, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Bell.
Good evening. I read Ed a long time ago sent me his military record, his whole military record, 214 and more. And he did everything he said he did in the military for the CIA. He remote viewed. Our government paid for it, about 20 million bucks or something, I forget. Actually, that's not a lot of money, Ed, for the government.
It's not, and I kind of squandered a little bit by using the military team to look at Enigma in those days, and got hit on the wrist a few times.
I can clearly see that doing what you did, it would be impossible not to drift and want to look at the biggest questions that man has.
Indeed, and so. I was a bad boy and used the team to look at a few things, and Bigfoot was one of them. I want to talk about Bigfoot because it provides some context for my capstone project, which is coming up in June after 22 years, and that's Project Starman.
You've been talking about Starman since we've been interviewing, which is now a very long time.
9.4 years.
9.4 years. All right, buddy. So Starman's now about to happen.
It is in June, first big field exercise. If that's a success, then I'm going to invite you on the next.
All right, tell everybody what Starman is. They may not know.
Let me provide some context first, because I think out of context it would be confusing. If that's okay with you.
It's okay with me.
And I'll start by talking about Bigfoot, Sasquatch. About 2 years ago, I mentioned to you that a team of my professionals took a look at this particular enigma that we call Bigfoot. And when trained remote viewers, and there are many trained remote viewers now, when trained remote viewers focus and work using stringent protocols, when they take a look at Bigfoot, inevitably a trained viewer will sketch a long rectilinear device seemingly out in space somewhere.
Device?
A device, yes.
Now, that doesn't sound like the hairy creature we've all come to know and imagine we love.
It's intimately connected and associated with this phenomenon that we call Bigfoot, which led me to believe that this device that we've seen before in conjunction also with Chupacabra, El Chupacabra, this thing actually serves as some type of, we thought at the time, as some type of a projector assembler taking carbon out of the, this was our theory, that it takes carbon somehow and reformats it into something that looks like this thing that we call Bigfoot. And the device itself is connected with entities in a place that is very, very distant.
Wait, entities, I've got to stop you there. Mm-hmm. When you say entities, do you mean as in extraterrestrial, or do you mean as in what we would consider spiritual?
We actually aren't. We do not know. We can't even sketch them. In the military, we call them the controllers because they seem to run everything from galaxy to galaxy. We can't sketch them. The world that they live on, we would consider very hostile. It doesn't have an atmosphere. It's the terrain is broken. It almost looks like a moon. And yet, they own a technology beyond our ken.
Wow.
And they are connected, associated with this particular device that we thought projected things like the Chupacabra.
Associated with, as in probably constructed and built?
Yes, yes. It belongs to them, and they use this thing to project these enigma down here. And that's why...
You have talked in the past, Ed, on many subjects of projection. So this must happen quite a bit. I can think of three or four instances where you suggested some anomaly we looked at was actually a projection.
Indeed. And because things like the Bigfoot leave impressions in mud and snow, it actually has a density, it has mass, but I thought it was a construct. However, recently we began to look at some of the newer photos, relook some of the photos that are available, and I just had this funny feeling that those photos show more than just a mass of carbon. When I remote view it a second time, I see that it has emotions, that this thing is really living. Make a long story short, this projector out there is more than it isn't a projector. And it isn't really an assembler either.
Wait a minute, you said this projector out there isn't really a projector.
Right. It isn't a projector in the sense that I described it 2 years ago. With more research, it is like a teleportation device. But it does more than that. This Bigfoot phenomenon, it is a real creature. It is a real Gigantopithecus or whatever you want to call whatever lived in North America a while back. It's real, and it really is a representative of that particular species, a 10-foot-tall sort of an ape man. So what I was interested in is where is this thing picking this particular Gigantopithecus up and transporting it into real time temporarily, because it goes away. I mean, the tracks disappear, and you never get to see one of these things.
It actually has what I think most of the people listening to this program would call paranormal aspects to it. It either disappears or it does something that, earth-trudging creatures simply wouldn't do. So there's an aspect of what we would call the paranormal.
Agreed. And to use contemporary vernacular. But this thing, what I wanted to know next was, where is this teleportation device picking up this creature and transporting it from? And it turns out nowhere, that the thing is canned, actually canned, as well as Chupacabra. The device itself somehow cans the essence of the creature and projects it. That's why it looks so lost when it's on the ground.
Okay, any idea at all, you know, assuming what you're suggesting is or have viewed is correct, of the motivation of the creation force behind this thing out there, this, I kind of think of an obelisk out there in cold, dark space doing these projections. That's, you know, kind of what you've set up in my head for me.
Yes, that's the hypothesis behind Project Starman.
Any idea of the motivation?
Yes.
Oh, rock on.
Yeah, the motivation is simply to be able to discern, to gain the insight, to develop a tool, a higher consciousness tool, to look behind this Wizard of Oz projection and see what is actually creating the enigma. And that is laying the groundwork. It's setting the groundwork for two things. One, it's forcing the development of a focused consciousness tool, in this case, remote viewing. It's forcing the development of a higher consciousness tool to see behind the enigma, behind this conundrum, this facade. And that, in turn, is setting the stage for contact with a higher intelligence, a la...
Starman.
A la Starman, yes. Because what we found now is that we're able, instead of building a device like in the movie and those kind of things,
yeah,
the protocols that are demanded are simply to go to a place that's designated as a contact area, which we did. We discerned this, we described it, we know where this place is, and we're testing that hypothesis in June.
In June.
Mm-hmm. And we have a spot in North America, in the continental United States. And it's a very unique...
What is your expectation? What do you believe will occur in June?
I don't know. I just...
What are your hopes?
My hopes are
talking about contact in June?
I am talking about contact. My hope is intervention. I'm hoping that a higher intelligence will intervene on this planet because we're going down.
There is that, Ed. And if we turn the conversation there, it's going to get kind of dark. But on the other hand, let's go there for a second. I mean, so much of what you have described ahead for us, Ed, is very dark.
Correct.
Very dark. And is it really your expectation that before the worst happens, there will be an intervention?
I don't think there will be unless we can, corporately can demonstrate a higher intelligence ourselves. That's my belief, right or wrong.
Well, then I think we're doomed.
Negative. I think that.
I don't know.
This animal called remote viewing that we pushed to the limits over the last 23 years, I think it's good enough to demonstrate that we can evolve into something that evolution's in the mind. You know, we're not evolving biologically, and we're not evolving socially, that's for sure.
We don't seem to be. Our technology, as you mentioned, is indeed evolving. Perhaps it'll get to the point where the dummies running it will finally invent something big enough to extinguish us, either on purpose or by mistake.
I totally agree. That is what I see, too. That is almost, that's the direction we're heading. And we've leaned so far in the material world that we've forgotten human potential.
But, Ed, why do you think or imagine that, for example, contact with, say, a Bigfoot, which you're saying is a projection, would lead you the next step or several steps of the way toward the intelligence that created this and then contact that might warrant intervention?
Because they know that you can see them. When you get behind the enigma itself, the projector, they know when you're looking at them, which means that we are talking 2001 monolith type of entities. They know that you know, you can see behind the Wizard of Oz facade, and you can tap the wizard on the shoulder and say, I see you. That changes everything. It changes the relationship of people to them, to the control, what we call the controllers. And then something else is going to change, and we're hoping that contact will demonstrate that.
Well,
it's pie in the sky, but we've worked 23 years to do this, and let's give it a shot.
And short of that intervention, short of success and real contact and intervention, the hope for mankind is, it seems to me, if half of what you have predicted comes true, slim and none.
I agree. In fact, I have to pull the plug on this project, and because I'm being pressed to the wall to look for on the nuclear terrorism issue. So this is the
Wait. You're being pressed to the wall by who?
Several countries, actually. The problem that we had in intelligence, and I worked at celestial levels of intelligence, Office of Secretary of Defense, and you know, I had all the clearances and the tickets, worked in all the really sexy black projects. We couldn't find a nuclear terrorist device. If it was, it was just no way. I don't care how much money you poured into the
project.
The only way to find something like that is to have detectors that could do it. The only option you have is...
Wait a minute. What about RVing?
That's what I'm saying. That's the only option we have for remote viewing.
Oh.
That's it.
All right. Well...
In terms of conventional...
I think a lot of Americans, Ed, want to know. So whatever work you've been doing on nuclear terrorism, let's have it. What do you see? What have you seen? What do you know?
I'll just give you a general overview.
Please.
Okay. There's a ton of money out there. There's a ton of hatred towards the U.S., and there are unscrupulous people in the ex-Soviet Union who have things for sale. You put those three elements together, and you have the sum of all fears.
That was slick. The sum of all fears. Yes, it is indeed the sum of all fears. And so... Tell me, Ed, is there one or two or more loose yet from the old Soviet Union, from Russia?
I cannot talk about that, Art.
Yes, you can.
No.
Sure you can.
There's two problems. One is you have devices that are already fabricated, and two, you have devices that can be fabricated, which are much more difficult. And I'm just saying that the market is there.
Well, we all know they're fabricated. They've been fabricated for years. They've existed for years, and we know the old Soviet Union, now Russia and elsewhere, it's leaky, and there's probably going to be some sold. I want to know if they have been, Ed.
I can't talk about it, Art. I really cannot talk about that. And
why the hell not?
Because it tips our hand. If we're closing.
Well, I will not press you for specifics. What I asked you is very general, and that is whether there's any nuclear weapons loose yet. I mean, there's been plenty of speculation about that in the media, so you're saying only that yes or a no to that question.
It depends on what you mean by loose. Some of them are looser than others. For instance, it's how much control does a country have on certain weapons? And if some of the control is looser than the security on, let's say, a nuclear reactor, a power plant, there are weapons up for sale, and that's a big problem. So how do you bring fire down on something like that when it's in a...
You're not going to destroy national security at all by telling me whether or not one is actually in the hands of terrorists right now. Because I won't ask you beyond that. But, I want to know if there are nukes on the loose.
No, they're not on the loose. Nukes are not on the loose.
And by saying that, you mean not in the hands of terrorists.
Yet. Yes, but it looks like it's heading that way.
Okay,
so
thanks for the answer. I really wanted that. And I don't know if it makes me feel a whole lot better, but at least temporarily a little better. And I hope to hell you're right.
Well, remote viewing is the only game in town. It's the only thing we had. It was a tactic of desperation to begin with, and now it's the only game in town to be able to...
How are you going to know if suddenly the wrong person is in possession of a nuclear device? Hold your answer. We're here at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back. The price, I guess, of living in this day and age is that we have to worry about things like nuclear weapons in the hands of people who want us dead. And so that's what we're talking about. Ed says they're not loose, as in the hands of Osama and company, yet. Yet, I guess the key phrase. Is remote viewing able to look ahead, Ed? And does your yet mean that you understand that they will become in their hands?
The yet that I used to qualify our earlier discussion, it means that there are people willing to sell weapons for the right price. That's what I mean. That there will be a facade of security was down or something like that.
All right. Well, my understanding is remote viewing looks into both the past and the future with as much ease as the present. So the question was, is one going to get loose?
I have not looked, Art. I'm too concerned with the now to mess around with the future. And the future is, there's paradoxes out there on the horizon too. So I concentrate on the present time. I have my team do that.
Do you have any idea what a paradox would produce? When you talk to Dr. Michio Kaku, he believes that a paradox, if actually done, would simply create another universe. Where that paradox would play out in its own way.
Let me give you an example of a paradox in my work, okay?
Sure.
If I were to remote view, let's say I were to remote view where you would eat your next dinner, the place where you would eat the next dinner.
Yes.
Now, there's two assumptions there. That there's two preconceived notions. One is that you'll be alive to eat dinner.
Right.
Two is that that you'll go someplace to eat dinner. But let's say that you're going to eat dinner and you're alive to do so in the future.
Okay.
Now, I can do that as a trained remote viewer. Anybody who's trained as a remote viewer can describe where you will eat your next dinner. But if there is any inkling in terms of consciousness that someone will tell you what the results are, then you won't be able to do that. Your data, your remote viewing data, will be incoherent. It'll be all.
Sorry, you're telling me what? That merely viewing what I am going to do will set up a paradox, causing me not to do it?
No, if I'm going to tell you what the results are and
yes.
allow you to change where you will eat dinner,
that creates paradox.
Then there's back talk through time. It creates a paradox, and I can't remote view where you will eat dinner.
And the results, then, of that paradox are not so serious as a new universe.
Well, in terms of just pure consciousness in my work, no, not, it isn't. But in terms of high-energy physics, I don't know. It scares me to think about. And we think in our work that there's a point where I call the pre-quantum field, where mind really does influence energy and matter. As you know, I've experimented with telekinesis and psychokinesis quite a bit. And so we see something going on there at a level that exists prior to what physics can observe at a level in the matrix itself.
It's my personal view, Ed, and I don't remote view, as you well know, that consciousness may turn out ultimately to be a power greater than atomic energy, greater than anything man has ever discovered. And I could be totally all wet on this, but I think someday that's where all of this is going.
I totally agree with you. You're preaching to the choir. It has to be focused and coherent, though. It has to be focused and coherent. You have to know how to use it. And that's the direction we... on our world, at least in this age, did not take. We took the material route.
Yes, we did.
Well, and we're not aware of really what human potential can do.
Well, maybe that's a good project for you, Ed. I would like to know how powerful consciousness really is. Mass directed intent. I'd like to know how powerful it really is. You know, I did a number of experiments, and then I began, I think appropriately, to chicken out because I realized I had something real on my hands, and I didn't know what the hell I was doing. So I would like you to make a list, and at the top of it, put examination of consciousness and how powerful it ultimately is, I'd like to know. I don't know if that's something you can do, but if you can, do it.
Okay. It's on my list.
Yeah, I mean it. I understand. And I think a lot of people want to know. I mean, we messed around, we played around, we got actual results, and it totally freaked me out, and it still does. And so I see this as a great power. Maybe even something that would prevent some catastrophic occurrence otherwise. Who knows?
No, I think it could, Art. All I'm saying is that it has to be in unison, and it has to be directed, and it has to be controlled. And we can't even get our act together corporately, you know, in terms of global warming. So, I don't know what the threshold value is for people and directed consciousness to do certain things. I don't know.
Do you see the story on the guy getting censored talking about global warming? Did you read that?
No, I did not.
You didn't. It's like was NASA's top guy on the subject, the top guy on the subject.
Oh, yes,
and
I did read that.
They stepped on him like a bug.
I did indeed read that, yes.
I really want to follow up on that. I would now very much like to interview him, actually get him on the air. Let's cause some trouble here and see if I can get him to open up, because I want to know what he really thinks. What do you really think? We're talking now about the warming and the weather changes on the planet. Hello in the Northwest. Seem rough up there this morning.
Well, as I've said years ago, a point's going to be reached where we, for instance, just with regard to agriculture, where crops can no longer be grown the way we've traditionally grown them because of vicissitudes in the weather. The weather's changing so rapidly, far more rapidly than meteorologists would ever imagine.
How quickly is it actually going to lead to serious agricultural problems?
10 years. 10 years. That's fast.
That's very fast.
That's very fast. And we're talking many, many, many people dying of starvation, many more than are dying presently in Africa, for instance.
Whew.
Water, for instance. Well, particularly, the water is the problem. There's just not going to be water where it used to be. Nations will fight over water.
Mm-hmm. I can see that coming. I can see fights over water. Maybe even wars over water. I don't know. But certainly, it is the absolute basic thing that man must have. Before anything else, you've got to have water.
We've looked at it as a commodity that's readily available for centuries, and that's going to change. We won't be talking petroleum in the future. We'll be talking water.
And nevertheless, these changes are really coming upon us quickly, Ed. I don't think there's a whole lot of disagreement out there about this anymore. I did a program years ago with Matt Lauer on NBC, and he kind of sniffed and chuckled, you know, at what we were talking about, Whitley and myself. And I've always been curious all these years when and if yet the light bulb has gone on above Matt Lauer's head. I really don't know, but there have been so many stories confirming what I told him then that I'm sure he's had his moments of consideration of what I said. I don't know if you ever saw the show I'm referring to.
I didn't see the show, but I'm certainly familiar with your book, The Coming Global Superstorm. Right?
Yeah, well, we were on the NBC show, and anyway...
I don't watch television.
Yeah, that's right, you don't. But you did agree to appear in your movie.
I'm making another movie, sort of an esoteric love story. I'm helping out on that. So I did the Hollywood stuff.
You're going to make a love story?
Believe it or not, yes. I'm a technical consultant on
a love story. Now, it's a little out of character there, buddy.
No, it has to do with former government psi spies trying to seduce females when they sleep, that kind of thing.
Oh?
I'm doing the back end, too. I'm being interviewed.
Oh, you mean to say, let's zero in on that for a second. Would it be possible for a remote viewer, because this really is remote, I think, remote influencing, that's what it sounds like,
mm-hmm.
To seduce a female while she sleeps? Would such a thing be possible, Ed?
A group, if they were trained the right way, could actually intrude into the dreams and actually disturb sleep of someone, but that's about as far as it could go in reality. And I'll describe that at the end of the movie, too. The movie is based on the book, The ESP Affair.
In the... Oh, The ESP Affair?
Yes.
Really?
Uh-huh.
So, in other words, the real premise is going to be somewhat fictional, then?
Correct. Correct. Uh-huh.
Okay. I'm sure that several young, pretty ladies out there just went, whew.
Well, somewhat fictional.
Okay, Ed, give me the real bottom line. What would be possible?
What I know is from my experience, the KGB, when they had, it's now the FSB, but when it was the KGB, yeah. The Soviet KGB had an extrasensor team. And they actually did, en masse, intrude upon Bob Monroe's dreams. Bob Monroe.
Robert Monroe.
Robert Monroe, yes.
The Institute.
And he came to the Army Sci-Spy unit, you know. Bob screened and vetted our recruits for the program. That's what we used him for. But the Soviets thought that he was in charge of the remote viewing program because we were sending so many people down to Nellie's Ford, Virginia, to experience things like out of bodies and altered states.
So you used the Monroe Institute officially? Is that?
No,
I don't think that's ever...
it was unofficially. It was
unofficially.
Yes, and Robert was read into the program, and we sent potential recruits through the Monroe Institute, the Gateway program that Robert had put together, and. We then interviewed them when they came back.
All of them, Ed?
Yes.
Wow. That's a headline.
Including
yourself?
Yes.
You went through the whole Monroe Institute program, is that correct?
I went through the program with Paul Smith. Paul Smith and I roomed.
Really?
At the time, yes.
Really, really, really. I've never heard this before. What were the results?
Well, we're not talking remote viewing here. We're talking about attempting out-of-bodies and altered states.
That's
in
right.
Order just to experience a side of ourselves that, for me, it was unconscious. What's an unconscious?
Oh, no, I see the connection. I mean, I see that why that training would be valuable in what you do. And so for you, what were the results? Were you able to achieve out-of-body?
I wasn't able to achieve out-of-body, but I did discover that there is a part of people, and this was... totally new to me, that there's a part of ourselves, our personalities and our essence that exists in another realm. Essentially, it's as if a part of us, a doppelganger, was somewhere else operating all the time, meeting people that in reality our physical being would meet, let's say, 5 years from now,
right.
Meeting them now and in this particular time, if that is even relevant. That there's something that goes on totally outside of our awareness, our conscious awareness, and that's what I ran into, validated by other people, saying, I saw you in an altered state talking to this person over here, someone who I would not meet for 5 years, for instance.
So describe to me the benefit that you felt there was for people who were going to do the kind of work you did in going to the Monroe Institute. How does it relate to, or how does it benefit remote viewing?
It expands your reality. It expands your reality, and it validates the fact that consciousness is, well, as Bob used to say, you're more than your physical self. It validates that quite a bit.
And boy, I hope that's correct. I really do hope that's correct. I've had experiences that have suggested that to me, Ed, but you just can't rule out the living human brain.
No, but when others validate that for you and say, I saw you, for instance, when I was in an altered state, I saw you talking to this particular person.
I know.
And then 5 years later, when it exactly matches, those kinds of things, you begin to actually... You can almost perceive other people, this other realm, which is very bizarre, actually. But you know that that the dimensions, the parameters of what we think we are in terms of conscious awareness go way beyond what most people in their day-to-day life think.
Yeah, way I hear you. I've really got to do more interviews on out-of-body. I'm going to line up, a couple of guests on out-of-body. I haven't done that in a long time. And
now, I tried to train that, of course, because that was a desirable. That was why I went to as the operations officer for the SciSpy. You know, what I wanted out of that training was to be able to train this so that we could use it for intelligence collection.
Well, all I can tell you is this, Ed. I interviewed a whole bunch of people on out-of-body, and there were many, many confirming real-world stories that, yes, somebody saw me 2,000 miles from where I was. There was a conversation. I was there in a sense that they recognized, and, you know, in the real world, some of this you could nail down. I mean, it does seem real. This out-of-body thing does seem real.
It's real, but we just couldn't control it for military use. That's the problem. For instance, if I would say,
yes,
okay, Private Wilson, you know, come back from an altered state, what went down? Can you tell me about this transporter erector launcher in this woods in Czechoslovakia? Oh, sir. Well, no, but man, it was the greatest thing in the world. I said, Wilson, I really need the information about that. Tell. And the experience was so profound that they would forget the details.
By the way, most of those that you trained, Ed, were they privates or were they almost all officers?
They were a mixed bag. They were senior non-commissioned officers. They were Army civilian intelligence operators, and they were officers.
Got it.
All
right. It's a short hour, Ed. It's almost over. And as always, I want to give you a chance to plug whatever you want to plug right now.
I'm a teacher. I'm a professional educator. I teach on the web at learnrv.com. And if you're interested in the products themselves, there's a toll-free number to dial. And you can buy those products, and you will learn remote viewing.
Well, go ahead. Give your toll-free number, for heaven's sake.
866-607-8439.
And you can get what?
Get a set of DVDs, my instruction, DVDs, systematic, very, very thorough instruction, and you will become a remote viewer. And you can choose to look at whatever you want to look at.
Oh, well, that's pretty inviting, all right. And I've talked to many of your students in the past, Ed, and they have high praise. That's the truth. Every single one of your students that is called here has always had high praise. Ed, do you do it anymore in person? I know you've got the DVDs out, but are you conducting any real...
Yes, I have a clinic in Las Vegas every 6 months for people who have learned on the DVDs and want more specialized training, higher level skills. It's called a skill enhancement clinic. I just had one 2 weeks ago in Las Vegas.
Oh, wow.
Every 6 months I do that.
Well, listen, buddy, I want to thank you for being here, and of course, you will be back. We'll do a show with you, I'm sure, not too far distant in the future. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Yes, take care, Ed.